Today, let's be honest, home prices must fall. Hi again, this is Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. One of the latest posts covering finance and property news. Okay, I'm going to say the quiet bit out loud. Sorry, folks, but if you want housing affordability to improve, home prices must fall. Even the simple trace tracking wages growth to home prices tells the tale, but of course, it's not a message that many of those holding property want to hear. I still get loads of comments from people who watch my shows poo-pooing any thought of a price fall of any size. But consider the New Zealand property story, because in Auckland, prices are now 23% down from their peaks, and in Wellington, they're down 25.4%. That's according to the latest from Catality. And nationally, they are down 17% from the peak. And yet, actually, it has not been the end of the world. People have coped with wealth destruction along the way. Rentals have eased and affordability has improved. And, as if by magic, yes, and they've also cut migration. But in Australia, politicians are just not being straight with us. Housing Minister Claire O'Neill found herself on a very sticky wicket on Wednesday morning when taken to task by Channel 7's Natalie Barr on breakfast television. So, Claire, you're saying you don't want property prices to go down to make it easier for first home buyers. That's just something that's happening? And O'Neill said, what we want to see is sustainable growth. Yes, that old mantra from the election. And then Barr said, so you want them to go up? And O'Neill said, well, Nat, what we want to see is a sustainable growth. We certainly need to see affordability improve. And Barr said, is that up or down? And on it went until O'Neill distanced the budget from what was happening in the housing market. The government's changes, Nat, are not what's driving house prices in our country. Principally, it's about making things fairer. Now, as I discussed in an earlier show, the Treasurer is wanting to blame the RBA rate hikes for easing markets, while the RBA says government policy has a critical role to play. Actually, both are true, together with the availability of credit, because actually, the availability and size of mortgages is the best proxy for home price momentum. Lift rates, cut tax breaks, reduce borrowing power, and magically, prices will fall just like clockwork. It's not that hard. Oh, and I would also add, build more homes or reduce migration and therefore demand, and that will also weaken prices. So, if housing affordability is the central aim of the government's policy changes, then prices have to fall. Yet, as the AFR highlighted in the recent article, just as in 2019 when Labour last promised to curb negative gearing and reduce the capital gains tax exemption, it is once again struggling to state the blindingly obvious. It began when last month's federal budget danced around the topic, saying the combined effect of the CGG increase and curtailing negative gearing will reduce investor demand that will likely lead to a modest and temporary slowing in housing price growth that improves affordability. Treasury modelling suggests house prices will attempt to grow by around 2% less over a couple of years relative to no tax policy change. Now, given that average house prices have grown at 6% over a year since the turn of the century, on average, they will continue to grow by an average of 4%. This means that a buyer purchasing a home at the current national median price would save around $19,000, the budget paper said. This improvement in affordability and lower investor demand is expected to shift the ownership mix towards more owner-occupiers. You can hear them struggling as they try to write something which says, no, prices aren't going to fall, honestly. Trouble is that for many, housing is already well out of reach, so slowing the rate of growth on top of an already fanciful price doesn't help them at all. Actually, in the initial data after the budget, the predictions look as though they have been wrong, because since the budget was handed down, house prices have fallen in Sydney and Melbourne. They've actually accelerated, While the national auction clearance rate fell below 50% last weekend for the first time since the COVID period back in 2020. And of course, Morgan Stanley has been predicting now house prices could fall by as much as 10%, which would be the largest correction in 40 years. So for those trying to buy, this is absolutely good news. Not so much for those wanting to sell, or for those with huge mortgages who risk being left with negative equity, such as the thousands who have taken advantage of the government's 5% home deposit scheme. Earlier in the week, Treasurer Jim Chalmers found a safer form of loans. Essentially, if prices dipped initially, that would not be a bad thing because housing was typically not a short-term investment. People don't typically only hold on to houses for a year or two. Housing is a medium-term investment, usually, or a longer-term investment. No, it's not an investment, Jim. It's for some ways to live. The problem is that we've financialized property to billio, and that is, of course, the root cause of a lot of the issues here. And he went on to say that the budget measures overwhelmingly was about making it fairer for first home buyers. Now, Coalition Housing spokesman Andrew Bragg said this week that Claire O'Neill just should have said the truth that everybody knows, that house prices for young people in this country are too high.
I think Australians are looking for authentic leadership. They're over the bullshit. What they want to hear from their politicians are honest answers. And the honest truth is that house prices in this country are too high for young people and they should go down.
The fact is that a young person knows the prices have been too high for too long. And of course, the truth is that for years and years, government policy settings and significant taxpayer dollars have been funneled into supporting home prices from home builder via first-time buyer grants of various sizes and the recent 5% or even 2% deposit schemes, which now look less flash given price falls that we're seeing. As I discussed with Evan recently, sales are slowing and prices are falling. Real estate agents have already dubbed the housing market slowed down the great pause. Prospective home buyers and sellers are stepping back until the dust settles and the impact of the tax changes work through the markets and the future of interest rates become more certain. Economists and property analysts have indeed predicted house prices could slump by as much as 10%, compounded by higher interest rates and the prolonged conflict in the Middle East. Actually, my scenarios go even worse than that, down 40% in the worst case scenario. Westpac analysts, though, forecast a 34% drop in new investor activity, a 20% decline in total housing turnover, and stalling home price growth across all capital cities this year. And as I showed in my weekend post, auction clearance rates, a shonky metric at best, is crashing. In the first weekend after the budget, less than half the homes listed for auction changed hands, with the final clearance rate dropping to 43.1%, according to Catality. And Ray White, chief economist Neera Cosby, said the real estate market has seized up and new listings slowed after the budget was handed down on May the 12th. Overall, we do expect a lot of uncertainty over at least the next few months. And then I think, depending on what happens, I think things will start to change, she says. We're definitely in a much weaker environment in terms of demand and it will flow through to pricing. We expect to see more properties being listed, but definitely there has been a pullback in transactions. And we're going to see lower application rates for mortgages and first-time buyers and investor mortgage applications declined by 13% and 19% week on week, according to recent data from Low Market. And borrowing power is down by as much as 30% for some investors, while higher mortgage rates and the newly reconfirmed 3% buffer from APRA have reduced owner-occupied borrowing capacity too. And it's worth noting, existing pre-approvals are being recalculated to comply with the new tighter conditions, although, of course, the legislation is still in train. Proposed tax changes already having a material impact on mortgage serviceability calculations by some lenders. For example, Brisbane-based loan market mortgage broker Cara Hines has been assisting a young couple wanting to access their home's equity to purchase an investment property in southeast Queensland before the plans to abolish the ability to negatively gear existing properties were announced. Their purchase price budget was $600,000, now it's $500,000. Mind you, the federal budget changes on property investments have driven a surge of inquiries for duplex homes from investors and owner-occupier buyers, keen to tap the benefits of negative gearing and the 50% capital gains tax discount that new home builds preserve. Of course, builders are hoping the budget restrictions limiting negative gearing and the CGD discount to new building projects that increase the number of homes, excluding investment in existing dwellings and capital investments in an existing single house, will drive demand for knockdown and rebuild projects that replace one house with two or more on a suburban site. But any boast won't be immediate, because in the short term, weaker price growth caused by a withdrawal of investors from the market for established homes will dampen development activity for all types of new housing, including duplex or dual occupancy housing, according to Tim Hibbert, Oxford Economics Australia's head of property and building forecasting. And overall, what New South Wales calls duplexes and Victoria calls dual occupancy doesn't make up a large part of Australia's housing stock. Over the 12 months to March, the number of semi-detached homes and townhouses approved made up just 17% of the national total, according to the ABS. The pickup in inquiries is most apparent in New South Wales, where the New South Wales government's low and mid-rise housing policy reforms opened up somewhere around 400,000 R2 residential zone sites in Greater Sydney for townhouse redevelopments, according to the Grattan Institute. And the Housing Industry Association has, in fact, revised up its forecast over the 5 years to 2030 in the largest state from about 287,000 homes to 290,000 to reflect the policies that genuinely move the needle on housing supply, according to their chief economist. But the HIA said construction costs, interest rates, and state policies have played a greater role in determining how many homes were built than changes to negative gearing, which allows investors to offset losses from a rental property against other income and the capital gains tax discount. In Victoria, where in contrast to New South Wales, the HIA has cut its five-year forecast from 323,000 to 320,000. And in Sydney, many developers say they have seen no improvement in feasibility for more affordably priced projects. HIA's Reardon said that after the effect of negative gearing changes on house prices and supply wore off after 2030, development volumes would increase faster than they had previously forecast. But the reduced supply in the meantime would actually make housing more expensive. And of course, construction costs continue to go up significantly, to the point where, in fact, the sale price is a lot lower than simply the construction costs to build, which means people won't start new projects. Because each year for the next 5 years through to 2030, we're going to be starting fewer homes than is necessary to meet that year's growth in population. The deficit of housing will get worse, according to the HIA, regardless of what happens with interest rates. The affordability challenge will deteriorate every year, at least through to 2030. So this is the catch-22 on the idea of property prices may fall. Property prices are functioned by the market and what people will pay, but also by what it costs to build new stuff. And as the cost of new stuff continues to rise, will that put a floor on some sectors of the market? Well, I suppose we'll see. And the question then is, well, so how far will prices fall? Will it be like New Zealand or worse? Well, that depends on whether the government turns back to supporting the market yet again and using more taxpayer money, or whether they really want to see prices drop. And I do note reports of some politicians selling their investment properties, which might be a signal, or is that simply, well, insider trading? But actually, the right thing to address affordability is to allow home values to fall, and frankly, fall hard. It's not a message many with paper wealth in housing want to hear, but actually it's the right thing for the future of the country. But such falls will also create heartburn for the banks, who are sitting on potentially risky loans as prices fall, and of course that leads to financial stability questions, and the broader fallout will probably push unemployment higher. So actually, if you want to track the likely path of property prices, then unemployment trends is also the one to watch after credit growth. But the bottom line is simply this, to state it plainly once again. House prices need to drop to make affordability easier for people. There is no way around this, and the politicians should just be straight with us rather than trying to please everybody and, in the process, looking, well, frankly, a little silly. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.